Well, I'm so glad you guys are here this morning. Thanks for coming to worship with us. I'm real excited because last week we kicked off this new series, and it's called Risky Business, and I'm really appreciative Pastor Ryan didn't recreate that theme from Tom Cruise's movie in his Tidy Whities. I think that would have been very detrimental to church growth here at Ashworth. But so we're really grateful for that. But this is going to be a great series that we're in this summer, because the tagline here is when comfort and faith collide. Has anybody ever been in that position before where you have found that your faith and your comfort have just kind of done this, and you're kind of led in that moment where you have to figure out what exactly are you going to do? Well, that's what we're going to look at every week for the next 6 or 7 weeks. We're going to take a look at characters in the Bible, Old and New Testament, and figure out what happens when that happens to us. When we feel like God is leading and God is speaking or God is calling us to do something, but in that moment, our comfort is called into question, or maybe our culture is pulling against what God is calling us to do. Now, if you've known me for any length of time, there's one thing that I really don't like. Let me just put this out there. I don't like phone calls. Anybody with me on that? I don't like the phone. I don't like to talk on the phone at all. I know, Amy's like, really? You never take my calls when I call? Well, there's a reason for that. My wife and I are total opposites. My wife can stick a phone to her ear for hours on end and just love it. Just love it. But I see the phone as a functional piece of equipment. You call me, you tell me what you need, we say goodbye, we move on. That's it. Is that the most man response I could have right there to a phone? And I will tell you, I have a rule when it comes to my phone. If you're not in my phone, I'm not answering your call. Amen, right? I mean, let's just be real. With the onset of so many robocalls and all, I mean, it's just amazing to me how many of these stupid phone calls you can get in a day. And so my rule is, if I don't have you in my phone, I won't answer it. Or if I'm busy, I won't answer it. I mean, growing up, you know, we had the landline at the house, and man, I remember that phone would ring, and my siblings and I would almost fight over who would get to answer the phone. Did anybody else have that in your house? I mean, it's like, ring, I got it, it's mine. Anymore, it's like, ring, turn it over, I don't even want to know. I don't even want to look at it, don't want to see it, don't want to deal with it. That's how it is for me, at least now. No caller ID means I'm not answering. But what I find, though, is that sometimes there's somebody I don't know that's been given my number, and they call me to tell me something that I need to know. This happened just a few weeks ago. My little no contact rule didn't really work well, because one of our church members was actually having issues, but they had a family member call, and they said, here's the number. And so I look, and I'm like, I don't know you. You're probably trying to sell me insurance. I'm not answering. And so then I needed to take that call. Now, fortunately, they left a voicemail. Typically, if I'm near my phone, I'll look at the voicemail, and I love Apple's transcription service, so I don't even have to listen to it. I can just look at it and determine if I want to even listen to the voicemail. And I was able to go, oh, okay, I need that call, and I can call them back. But sometimes I do miss those calls if I'm not careful. There's a story in the Bible that I think comes into play when I think about how I deal with phone calls. Because when I think about the way God interacts with us, and the way God is moving and working in the world, sometimes I wonder if when God calls me, if God has something for me to do, am I always willing to answer that call? Am I always willing to look at that and go, oh, God's calling. Oh, hey, God, how's it going? Or I look at that call and go, ooh, I'm not sure what he's going to ask. I'm not sure if he's going to want me to do something I really want to do. He may ask me to do something very uncomfortable, outside my comfort zone, outside my culture, outside whatever. And I think maybe you have probably experienced that too. You've probably been in that position where you've felt God, you've known God was leading you or calling you, and you're in that position and you have to think to yourself, what am I going to do? I mean, I know for me throughout my life, there have been several experiences where that nudging in my heart, I've just kind of felt like you need to go do this, go say something, go somewhere to, you know, say something to someone. And sometimes we can find that these calls, we typically think they're always going to be big. We typically think, oh, well, if I answer God's call, he's going to call me to go to Africa. You know, he's going to call me to, you know, somewhere big overseas, and I'll have to sell everything I have and leave everything behind. And sometimes he does. I mean, praise God, he does call people to go overseas and share Jesus with people. But you know, not all the calls are always so drastic, and I find that it's even in the simple ones that I'm not always willing to answer. Maybe it's just that nudging within that says, hey, write this person a letter, or shoot this person a text, or give this person a call, which is the worst because I hate the phone. But it inconveniences us, but we feel compelled to do it. Maybe it's just to pray for somebody. Or maybe, God forbid, to share Christ with somebody. When you feel God's calling on your life, when you feel that nudge inside, what's your reaction? What is your reaction? Do you find yourself more willing to kind of hit the decline button because it's more willing, you know, you think it's going to be uncomfortable? Or do you joyously and excitedly respond? Well, this morning I want us to look at the life of Moses, and specifically a very familiar part of Moses' life to kind of see, how did Moses respond? And I'm going to tell you, as I studied this, it's very shocking when you see how Moses responded, because when we think of Moses, we have one picture, but it's not really, doesn't really match up with the way we see him today. In the second book of the Old Testament, Exodus, we find the story of the Israelites. So you've read through Genesis, you've got Abraham, God's called Abraham, he's made a promise to him, he said, I'm going to multiply your descendants, you're going to have this great nation, and I'm going to give you a land. But when you get to the end of Genesis, what's happened is there's been a famine, and so all of Abraham's descendants have moved to Egypt because that's where the food was. And in the beginning, they were taken care of well because Joseph was kind of under Pharaoh. And so it was okay. They were taken care of. But then Joseph dies. And then the Pharaoh forgets Joseph. And a new Pharaoh takes over. And so little by little, the population of the Israelites begins to expand. And the Egyptians begin to feel threatened. And so what they do is they enslave the Israelites. And we're not talking about nice enslavement. This is hard labor. This is difficult work. They're doing everything they can to keep these people oppressed. And then you begin the book of Exodus, and that's where we're at. They're in Egypt, and they're being oppressed, and they're slaves. And we're introduced to this guy named Moses. And Moses is born in a time where Pharaoh had issued a decree that said, kill all the babies. And Moses' mom said, I'm not going to do it. So she hit him, and maybe you've heard the story where his mom hit him in a basket in the river, and Pharaoh's daughter comes and finds him and says, oh, I love this baby. I'll take him and raise him as my own. And so Moses grows up in Pharaoh's household, educated. But as he becomes a man, one day he sees two people fighting, and he decides to step in. And in doing so, he kills one of the individuals. And so he realizes that he's done something terribly wrong. Somebody has seen him do it, even though he thought he got away with it. Other people know. And then he's on Pharaoh's radar, and Pharaoh's like, all right, I'm going to take you out. So he has to flee, and he has to run to save his life. He ends up in an area called Midian. He meets a woman. They get married. They start having kids. And Moses settles into what we would think is just a normal life. He's going to be a shepherd, and he's got his father-in-law's sheep, and he's just out in the desert taking care of these sheep. And that's where I want us to pick up this story today, because in Exodus chapters 3, as Moses is out here taking care of the sheep, he has this very interesting encounter with God. Let me read part of it to you. It says, now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. And he led the flock to the far side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a flames of fire from within a bush. Moses saw that the bush was burning, or was on fire, and it did not burn up. So Moses thought, I will go over and see this strange sight, why the bush does not burn up. Moses and I have very different responses in this moment to what's going on here. When the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God called to him from within and said, Moses, Moses. And Moses said, here I am. Do not come any closer, God said. Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground. Then he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. At this, Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. Then the Lord said, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I've heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I am concerned about their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them out of the land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey, the home of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. And now the cry of the Israelites has reached me, and I have seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now go, I am sending you to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites, to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. It's an interesting story. Here we have Moses just out there one day minding his own business, doing his own thing, you know, just watching the sheep, and there he sees this bush. And not only is this bush burning and not being burned up, but he sees this bush and this bush starts talking. And I mean, that would be kind of a concerning moment for me, but not to Moses, evidently. I don't know, maybe this happens often. But he sees it's not just anyone talking to him. It's actually the voice of God, the God that he was actually raised to know. Because even though he was raised in Pharaoh's house, when he was very young, Pharaoh's daughter needed a nurse. So she said, she went and found a Hebrew woman, and she actually got Moses' mom to nurse him. And so Moses had the benefit of being raised with the knowledge of God, with the knowledge that Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, the promise of God. Moses knew all this, so this was not new to him. And he begins to understand what's happening here. He knows enough about God to know that, okay, this is important, this is significant. And did you notice that it says when he realizes kind of what's going on, he hides his face. He realizes that he is in the presence of greatness in this moment. God's got something he wants to do. And he invites Moses to be a part of it. He said, I've heard their cries. This is terrible what's happening, and I'm going to do something about it. And he says, Moses, not only am I going to do something about it, I am going to make good on my promise to give you a land flowing with milk and honey. I'm going to take you into the promised land. And here's the really fascinating part to me. It constantly amazes me because God is God. God spoke everything that is into existence. He holds all things by his hand. He is the creator. He doesn't need our help in anything. And yet for some reason in this moment as he's speaking to Moses, he says, and I want this to happen. And Moses, I want you to be a part of it. I want you to be a part of this incredible plan. Now, I don't know about you, but that's an honor that God has something he wants to accomplish and he wants to use Moses, and Moses gets the opportunity to do this. But let's read a little bit further and see how Moses reacts to this, what we would maybe call an honor. So in verse 11, we pick up and it says, but Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt? Moses' first response is maybe sometimes our first response. Who, me? Who, me? His first question is, who am I? You see, God is saying, I'm going to put you in front of the ruler of Egypt, the world's superpower at this time, and you're going to go and say, God said, let my people go. Lead over a million people to the promised land. And granted, this is going to be incredible. This is not a small task. But Moses, in this moment, not looking at, oh, you're the God I've heard about. You're the God that has all power. You're the God that can do anything. He's looking and he goes, oh, man, me? I'm not so sure about this. He's got a disbelief. He's got self-doubt. I'm sure in this moment he's thinking about his past. He's thinking about, I've messed up. I've done too much. There's no way. I've screwed up. I've killed a man. I'm a murderer. God, what are you doing? This can't be about me. I'm a lost cause. Just let me sit out here in the desert and do the shepherding thing. This is a lot easier because, God, I'm a failure. You see, Moses had run away in disgrace. He'd spent 40 years at this point herding the sheep for his father-in-law. And I'm assuming that he thought, this is where I'll spend the rest of my life. I'll just stay here and do this. And Moses says to God, hold on, let's back the truck up a little bit here. Who are you talking to? Because I can't do that. And in verse 12, God has a response for Moses. And God basically says to him, he says, you're right, you can't. Look at verse 12 on the screen. It says, and God said, I will be with you. and this will be a sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain. God says, I'm going to give you a sign because you're going to come right back here. When you lead the people out, this is going to be where you're coming. You know what? He didn't say, look, I just need you to do this, so go. He didn't say, I'm going to give you a map on how to do this. He didn't say, Brent's going to come alongside you and help you. He said, I will be with you. And I think that's important and significant because God isn't even saying to him, I've got your back. God is saying, look, I'm going to do this. I just want you to be a part of what I'm doing. God is saying, I've got this. Something really amazing is about to happen. So let's do this. Now, I don't know. That's a pretty decent answer to Moses' first question, right? I mean, I will be with you. Okay. The voice of God coming from a burning bush, he says, I'll be with you. We've got this then. Not necessarily. Moses still isn't satisfied. Verse 13 says, Moses said to God, well, suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, the God of your fathers who has sent me to you, and they ask me, what is his name? Then what shall I tell them? You see, Moses' first question is, who am I? But then he asks another question. He says, who are you? Who are you? If they ask, the whole town, you know, who are you? They're going to wonder who I am here standing and who sent me. But he goes from asking who I am to now asking who are you, and it shows that both questions fixate on the wrong person. You see, as Moses says, who am I? He's beginning to think, well, how can I do this? I'm limited in my strength. I'm limited in my power. My past is a prevention for me. It won't allow me to do this. And even in the second spot, he says, who are you? He's still fixated on the wrong person. He's too focused on his role, his intelligence, his strength to do the job, on his limitations. And he's not focused enough on whose job it was in the first place to do the job, and that is God. Because God says, I'm the one that's going to be doing the delivering. And you've got to love God's answer in verse 14. Because God says to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you. You see, God says, you want to know who I am? I'll tell you who I am. I'm the all-powerful, self-existent creator of all that is. I'm the one your mama told you about. I'm the one that's been they've been telling stories about for thousands of years. That's who. Let me take the doubt out of your mind, Moses, because I am that God. I'm not all the God you heard the Egyptians talking about. I'm bigger and better than them. I am the self-existent, one true God. I am. Now, for some people, you got a question about the first, who am I? And God says, don't worry, I'm with you. The second one, he says, who are you? God says, I'll tell you who I am. I'm the one, I am. And for many people, we might be convinced, but not Moses. Because he continues on. And so when we get over to chapter 4, Moses wants to speak back to the bush. And he says, okay, Moses answered, what if they do not believe me or listen to me, and they say the Lord did not appear to you? You see that third question he asks. He says, who am I? And then he says, okay, God, you're asking me to do this, but who are you? And then the third question is this, oh, but God, what if? What if? What if they don't believe me? What if they don't listen to me? What if they reject me? What if they want to arrest me and kill me for what I've done? You see, Moses at this point begins to start making excuses. And I want to be the first to say, though, that these are probably very legitimate excuses. You know, sometimes we look and you'd say, oh, Moses, you are so unspiritual. You know, have faith, Moses. No, I mean, I put myself in Moses' position. I'm like, no, you got some real concerns there, buddy. You killed somebody, they're probably looking to kill you. They're going to arrest you. They're going to make your life miserable. And these people that know you, they're going to be like, yeah, we're not following you anywhere. So he begins to make these excuses. But as you read, God again has another response for Moses. Because in this moment, he looks and God says to Moses, he says, all right, Moses, what do you have in your hand? And he was a shepherd, so he had a staff for guiding and correcting the sheep as he needed. And God says, all right, Moses, throw it down. So Moses throws it on the ground, and it becomes a snake. Now, I'd been gone at that point. I don't do snakes. Don't like snakes. Not at all. But a snake, there it is. And then God looks, and he says, Moses, pick it up. God would have had to have had a talk right then. But Moses reaches down and picks it up. And as soon as he does, it turns right back into a staff again. That's pretty impressive. That's pretty miraculous. But God's not done. He says, Moses, take your hand, put it in your cloak. Now pull it out. And he does, and he looks at his hand, and his hand now has leprosy. It is diseased. That's impressive. Not too cool when it's your hand, but cool on somebody else. And God says, all right, do it again. Pull it out. Oh, it's healed. It's gone. You see, when Moses says to God, what if? God says, let me show you my power. Let me show you who you're dealing with. I am the God. I've got this, Moses. I am bigger than your limitations. I am bigger than your excuses. I am bigger than anything that might prevent you from accomplishing this task, because it's my task that I'm going to do, and I want you to be a part of it. So just go. Now, again, three legitimate questions, three really good answers, and you would think, okay, Moses goes. He does what God wants him to do. Amazing things happen. But as we keep reading, we see that it's not yet. Moses, filled with self-doubt, filled with questions, filled with just this, I don't know about this, still looks at God and has another reaction. Because in chapter 4, verse 10, listen to this. It says, Moses then says to the Lord, pardon your servant, Lord. You got to love that. Excuse me, God. I have never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you have spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and of tongue. So Moses begins. He says, who am I? He says, who are you? And he says, what if? And in this moment, Moses looks at God and he says, all right, I can't. I can't. I can't speak well, God. You've got the wrong guy. So he's looking again. He finds reasons why he can't do this. And what's amazing to me is I'm thinking, okay, so the bush that's not burning, that God is speaking to you currently through, the God that's doing all this, the God that turns the staff to a snake and back and diseases your hand and makes it better, can't deal with a little speech impediment. But Moses, again, is focusing on the wrong things. He continues to look at himself, and God says, stop looking at yourself. Quit focusing there. But Moses can't. He can only see his limitations, his shortcomings, his deficiencies. And he's not focused on what God can do through him. And I think he's beginning to grasp at straws, because God's doing a pretty decent job of answering all his questions and responding to him. And God's response in this moment is, he looks at Moses, and through the bush, he says, Moses, who made you? I did. Who created your mouth? I did. And literally he says to Moses, I will be with your mouth. Now go, and I will help you, and I will teach you. And that's what God says. He says, look, I'm going to speak through you. This is going to be fine. It won't just be you there. I'm going to be there with you. Remember the first question, who am I? I will be with you. So God has just systematically gone through and answered every one of Moses' concerns. And when all of them are removed, we get to verse 13 of chapter 4. And it says, but Moses said, pardon your servant, Lord. Please send someone else. Moses begins by saying, who am I? He then says, who are you, God? He then says, what if? Three questions that God immediately answers. He then looks at God and he says, oh God, but I'm limited. I have things that I just can't overcome. I can't. And then finally, here at the end, when God is there asking him to do this, Moses looks at God and he says, God, I won't. He says, God, I won't. I hear what you're saying. I know what you're asking me to do, but God, I won't do it. And what I find is just an amazing moment with God interacting with humanity. God is frustrated with Moses, and he says, okay, Moses, that's fine, but get your brother. He's coming to see you anyway. We'll use him. He'll be the mouthpiece. But just so you know, it didn't work out so well for Moses to have his brother right there with him the whole time. Because if you remember the story of Mount Sinai, and Moses goes up to the mountain and get the Ten Commandments. When Moses comes down, who's the one that has led the people in this chaos of building a golden calf to worship? It's his great brother Aaron who is now helping him. It's trouble for Moses. Moses gets to the place though, and he just says, but God, I can't. And God removes that and he says, oh, but God, I won't. Now, I don't know about you, but when I hear this story of Moses and his reluctance to step into this role that God has called him to, it really doesn't jive with the role or the thought I have about Moses. I mean, I've seen the Ten Commandments movie. I've seen Charlton Heston where he stands before Pharaoh and he says, let my people go. I mean, that Moses right there, that's a power dude, man. He's not scared of anybody. He's standing there before the Red Sea and whoo, it's parting. And that man is bold and powerful, but that is not the man we are encountering here in the desert. This is a man who is afraid. This is a man who has questions. He has self-doubt. He doesn't believe that God can use him for anything. You see, we expect the deliverer of the nation of Israel to respond differently, but Moses was reluctant to follow God's call. Why? Because there was great risk involved in saying yes to God. And I don't know about you, but as much as I would love to look at Moses in this story and go, come on, Moses, it's God. Just say yes, follow him. I'd love to judge him. But then when I think about, what if I was in that role? I think I might respond very similar to the way Moses did. You see, I wish I understood it. But I know that for some reason, whatever reason, God continues to want to use people for his work in the world even today. I think about God and who created it all, and I think, man, you have not chosen efficiency. Because if you wanted efficiency, God, you would just do it yourself. Parents, you can understand that, right? You've got a task to do at home and your kids want to help and you're like, oh, it's going to take me three times as long to get this done. But what do? Good parents. I say good parents because some of us aren't that good and sometimes we're like, no, I got this. But good parents do what? They say, no, come on, join with me. And isn't that what God is doing? God has not just created this world and made things happen and then shaking his hands off and step back and go, okay, let's watch it go. No, God is still active. He's still engaged. He's still involved in the world today. And he wants to use you and he wants to use me to be a part of what he's doing, to bring his kingdom into this world, to show the world that there's a better way, that there's a better life, that there's a better God out there than the God of this world, that we don't have to live according to this standard, that God says there's something more. You were created for more. Your life is meant for more. And instead of just doing it and snapping his fingers, he says, and I'm going to use you. Those of you sitting in this room today, I'm going to use you to be a part of this. And I think for some of you today, God has been speaking to you. Maybe not through a burning bush, because we don't get those very often, but maybe through the Holy Spirit. Maybe through the circumstances of your life, through the people around you, maybe even through the church. God has been calling you to step into something, and like Moses, you find yourself stuck in this loop of questions and reasons why you can't or won't say yes to God. You see, I think for some of us, we can get caught up in the who me question. I don't know enough. I'm not far enough along in my faith. I've done things in my past I'm not proud of. You see, what happens is our self-doubt will paralyze us. It will keep us from being able to move forward. It will cause you to feel like a failure. You feel like you've done way too much for God to ever be able to forgive you, much less use you in some way. And for some of us, we want to claim a little humility. And humility is required, but we may think our who me question is just being humble, but we can't mistake our insecurity for humility. It's not the same. The same word that God spoke to Moses is the same word that he speaks to us today. You can do this. If God calls, you can say yes. Why? Because God will be with you. You aren't alone. He will be with you every step of the way. You know, back in the winter of 2011, I've shared some of this before, but you know, we were in the midst of a pastoral transition here. I was the associate pastor and the guy that was lead resigned. And some crazy people here at Ashworth came to me and they said, hey, would you be willing to step in and kind of be our interim pastor for a few months until we figure out what's going on? I've never been one to back down from a challenge. That's not always good. But I said yes, and I stepped into this role 6 months as interim pastor. I'd never preached weekly before in my life, ever. And all of a sudden, Sunday was coming. And I can remember during those first 6 months, and it lasted much longer than that. Sometimes it still lasts this today. I can remember I would preach a message on Sunday, and I'd go home and I'd go, okay, I feel good about that. That went well. Okay, didn't pass out on the stage. Said words that were cohesive in thought. All right, good. And as I would lay in bed on Sunday night, I'd get this knot in my stomach. And I'd just almost be sick. Do you know why? Because I'd go, oh, crap. Sunday's in 7 days. And I got to do this all over again. And in that moment, I was terrified. I was thinking, what have I done? There is no way I can do this again. And then the self-doubt comes in, and it's just like you think to yourself, oh, they're going to find me out. They're going to figure out that my well of sermons is about 3 deep. And then they're going to get rid of me. I mean, it was just all these emotions of why I couldn't do this. Who, me? I'd never in my life thought about being a lead pastor before. I mean, I'd worked in churches forever and been on staff, and I'd co-led a church before, but even then it was different. I mean, I wasn't the guy in charge. I wasn't the guy on the front. And it was just this moment where it's like, you can't do this. What are you doing? You're in the wrong position. And I'll tell you, those days I described as a roller coaster where God was in charge and I was just holding on for the ride. And I said yes because I knew in that moment that the God who called me, he told me, I will be with you. And he has been with me ever since. You see, we've got to take the focus off ourselves when God calls to realize what God is asking us to do often is way bigger than anything we could ever do. Yeah, if it's dependent upon my intelligence, we're in trouble. If it's depending upon my strength, I'm in trouble. But that's the thing. It's not. And God wants to do things through us with our warts, with our skeletons in the closets, and all. And what we need to remember is what Moses had to be reminded of, is that God is greater than your inadequacies, your lack of experience or talent. God is bigger than all those things because your deficiencies do not determine what God is able to accomplish through you. Let me say that again. Your deficiencies do not determine what God is able to accomplish through you. I think we forget that sometimes. Well, God, I'm not wealthy. So what? God is. He owns it all. Well, God, I don't know. He does. And if we will surrender ourselves to Him, we will find that God can do amazing things through us. Our resume or our credentials or our lack thereof are not a factor in God's calling. Over and over and over in Scripture, we find God calling ordinary people out of ordinary circumstances for extraordinary means, extraordinary purposes. And He is looking for people that are willing to say yes. People who are willing to answer that call. Maybe you're stuck in the who are you part. Moses had the stories of God. He had no Bible. Think about that. He didn't have the Bible at this point. No years of small group to attend, no Sunday school classes he grew up in. But in this moment, he had everything he needed with God. He had experienced God, and he was going to get to know God through experiencing Him each and every day by walking with God in the classroom of life. And I will tell you that knowing God isn't as much about the right theological education as it is about the right relationship. And I hope that's shocking to hear a pastor say, because it's true. We get all caught up. We think, I need 5 more years of small group or Sunday school class. And it's like, why? Live your life with God. Walk with Him. Pray to Him. Sing to Him. Read about Him. You will have everything you need by living in that relationship with God. And don't get folks fixated on your limitations or the size of the task. We need to focus on the God who has called us to the task. He is all-powerful. He owns it all. He's not limited by anything. And when He calls, He knows that He will give you everything you need to do exactly what He needs you to do. Maybe you're stuck in the what ifs. And let's call these what they really are. They're fears. They're fears. Fear of commitment. Fear of taking up too much of our time. Fear of what other people might say when they hear about what we're doing. Fear of maybe having to adjust our social life. Fear of maybe having to actually make a sacrifice. When we get to this place, it is apparent that what we believe, what we have now, is better than what we could experience with God. Now think about this for a moment. When we get stuck in these fears and these excuses, what is that driven by? It's driven by the belief that my life as it is right now today is better than it could possibly be if I say yes to God. Now, I'm going to qualify this and I'm going to tell you, it doesn't mean you're going to live on easy street. It doesn't mean everything is going to just fall in your lap and money's going to rain down on you from heaven and all these things. That's not what I'm saying. But think about Moses for just a moment. What would have happened if Moses had said no? When we read the rest of Moses' story, what did Moses experience? He experienced an audience. He was in the presence of the world's leading superpower, Pharaoh. He sat there, and with his arms extended, he parted the Red Sea because of the power of God working through him. He went to Mount Sinai, where he went up to the top of the mountain, and a cloud of fire descended on the mountain, and he met with God face to face for 40 days. Says that God called Moses. He spoke to Moses face to face as one does with his friend. None of these things would have been experienced. Not one of them. If Moses had just said, "You've got the wrong guy. I'm out." You see, sometimes we think where we are is as good as it's going to get. And I'm just here to tell you that when we say yes to God, we find it's better with God than without. We need to readjust our thinking. And we have to stop focusing on what we might have to give up if we say yes to God and think about what we might be sacrificing if we say no. What might we be truly giving up if we just walk away from God and say no? See, I think that's significant because I don't know about you, but I don't want to miss out on what God has. I don't want to miss out on a deeper relationship with God. I want to be there. See, Moses' problem wasn't that he questioned God, but that he refused to trust God's answers. And the question for you is, do you trust God's answers? How will you respond to God's call? Because God is calling us. God is speaking to us, not through the burning bush, but through something even better, through the Holy Spirit that lives within us. The interesting thing about the call of God is you can't go with God and stay where you are. You see, when God called Moses, he couldn't stay shepherding in the wilderness any longer. It required him to move. Doesn't mean move across the world, but it may mean to move out of your comfort zone. It may mean saying yes to some things that normally you wouldn't do. But the trade-off is getting to be a part of something eternally significant, something so much bigger than each of us individually. We get to be used by the great I Am to make an eternal difference in His kingdom. So this morning, I just close with this question. What is God calling you to? What is that burning that you're feeling in your heart, in your soul, in your spirit this morning? Maybe you're like Moses and you're trying to find every reason to say, no, I can't, I won't. Maybe you've got a million questions. This morning, I want you to understand that what waits on the other side is so much greater than what we're experiencing now when we're willing to say yes to God. For some here, maybe it's just that first step, and you think that first moment is stepping in faith with Jesus, that I've never done that before, that I've never even just said yes to following Jesus. You know, that's a difficult obstacle sometimes to overcome, and it's scary. And we can all come up with a million reasons why we shouldn't. But when we look at the cross and we understand what Jesus did there and we see the empty tomb and the life that Jesus is offering, truly there is something greater waiting for us if we will take that step to follow Jesus than if we won't. If you're following Jesus, maybe it's just that burning to speak to a coworker. It doesn't have to be massive. Maybe it's to reach out to a neighbor. Maybe it's just something in your own family about parenting your children. I don't know. But what I do know is that we serve a God who did not take his hands off his creation, that he is actively engaged and involved with us today. And he's inviting you to be a part of what he's doing. The question is will you say yes? Would you pray with me?